finish quite a little bit earlier. But if we continue the way we are, we will just simply have a challenge, I think, on that part of the whatever. So, but we just cross fingers that we do make a 50% plus one or something like that by the time we reach that point. Honorable members and staff and Kuyamore. I think we have a program in front of us, and then you may have received the program some couple of days back, and you'll see that there are changes on the program. The section that Honorable Froley was supposed to start, I think he has got an engagement, and his session now has been moved almost towards the end to allow him to complete the meeting that he's having and then to come and actually brief us on his expectations of this particular committee. So we're having Salmon. Is that how you spell it? Not Solomon. Salmon. Yes, we have Salmon, and then on the rights and responsibilities of committees in relation to government departments and entities. This is about our relationship and the lines of authority. Then we have got Kayalethu Zweni, and then who's actually going to deal with the relationship we have with Chapter 9 institutions in general. But we do have the Central Committee that we're dealing with as Home Affairs. And then we'll be having the committee secretary taking us through the legacy report and the second term program that we should talk to, and then those minutes. And then we'll be having Honorable Froley, the House Chairperson for committees, on the roles, responsibilities, and expectations from the committee. Not necessarily expectations of ourselves, but expectations from our committee. What is it that's expected for us to do? He will come and take us through the end. I think we'll be done. We actually like to have the workshop up to 3 o'clock initially, but it did not work because we were planning to have it tomorrow. And then because it's not our sitting day, and then the request was refused, and then now we're forced to have a workshop today on our day as a committee. But then we are limited, all the time we are limited by the plenary that we are having. And therefore, it's not a lot of time that will be allocated to the speaker. But because we'll be having the documents and they will have just gone through them, and then I think it will be easy for us to be able to move forward. On that score, honorable members, I would like to ask Adam to take us through. And looks like he's got 30 minutes. And, but I mean, having 30 minutes doesn't mean that you must use all 30 minutes. If you don't need to, then you can only make life easier if you can manage to finish without completing the 30 minutes. Thank you, take us on.
Good morning, and excuse me for having my back to you. It's a strange venue in that regard. As you'll notice, the title of the presentation is slightly different from that on the schedule, and that's just because there might have been a little bit of overlap between my presentation and that of Honorable Froley. So this presentation focused primarily on the legal mandate of the committee, just outlining what legislation supports us in doing the work that Parliament does in relation to government departments. and particularly the kind of government departments that are related to this committee. And then I'll also just look at it briefly in outline of the usual structure of the committee year, and as well as the usual process that goes through legislation. And you'll notice these big sheets are good reference documents for that process, for members who are not familiar with that yet. So the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs has three different entities that are associated with it in its oversight work. The one is the department, the Home Affairs Department. Then there's a Chapter 9 institution, the Electoral Commission. And then a government component, which is a particular kind of government entity defined in terms of the Public Financial Management Act. And we'll go into some detail about these. The Chapter 9 institution will be covered more by the Office of the Institution for Modern Democracy, so I won't go into that into too much detail. As Eddie also pointed out in the email that was sent to members, the Former Publications Board, which used to be under this portfolio, has now been moved by proclamation of the President to the new Communications Department, so we'll no longer have to deal with those issues. Moving on, this is an outline of the legislation that relates specifically to our work with, or the committee's work with departments and entities, which I'll go into more detail. The Constitution, the Public Service Act, the Public Finance Management Act, the PFMA, the Powers and Privileges and Immunities of Parliament Act, Rules of the National Assembly, Money Bills, Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. And I believe members would have received some training on this, so I'm not going to go too slowly. The documents are there also just for reference if ever needed. The Constitution, there's five specific sections that relate to National Assembly Committee that dictate how we liaise with the department. In the sense that Section 55, all state organs of state are accountable to the National Assembly, and in that sense, the NA needs to maintain oversight of the executive and all organs of state and legislation. Section 56 says that committees can summon anybody or receive submissions from anybody or documents, request any documents. So we're legally mandated to be able to do that. Section 190. It defines the role of Chapter 9 institutions in terms of their functions and how they're composed and their responsibilities. Section 190 defines specifically the Electoral Commission, and that's part of the Chapter 9 Constitution. But I believe that the Office of the Institution Supporting Democracy, the OSID, will go into more detail about that. Section 195 and 197 basically just give out principles of public administration, which dictate how any government component or organ of state should function, and that's in terms of ethics, efficiency, a developmental agenda, and that needs to be equitable, transparent, and accountable. So that's just basic guidelines in terms of the Constitution of how departments should behave. The Public Service Act is important in terms of it's defining what a government department is, and also it lays out the specific roles of the government printing works, because unlike other entities, it doesn't have a specific piece of legislation that relates to how it functions. It's got an amendment, it's called a proclamation, which is basically an amendment to the Public Service Act, which defines how the government printing works functions. Section 7 and Schedule 1 of the Public Service Act define the Department of Home Affairs as a national department with the DG as its head, and that's important because the DG is also the accounting officer, and that makes the DG primarily responsible for presenting to the committee about the functions of the department. Also says the responsibility of that DG is he needs to be efficient, efficient manager in terms of staff, property, and finances. And then, as I said, that Schedule 3 with Proclamation 58 of 2009 explains the specific roles of the government printing work if we were ever needed to hold them accountable in terms of their legal responsibilities. Moving on. The PFMA has a number of sections which relate to reporting and accountability. Section 36 says that the DG is the accounting officer. Section 38 says that the DG is responsible for efficient, effective, economical, and transparent use of resources of the department. Section 38J says that the accounting officer of the department must ensure efficient, effective, and transparent financial management and internal control systems for entities before transferring funds. So this is important in the sense that the government entities are actually accountable to the DG, and the DG in turn is accountable to us. So as a matter of practice, we engage directly with the entities because it's more accountable. But in terms of legislation, they're actually accountable to via the DG. Luckily, this department, well, this portfolio doesn't have that many entities, so we usually are able to cover all the entities, and now we have one less. So it's only two additional entities, so we will be quite successful in actually directly encountering the two entities. Section 40 says that all government departments and entities must submit their reports, returns, notices, and other information to Parliament. It also says that it needs to do their annual reports within 5 months of the end of the financial year, which means that they need to give us the annual report by the end of September, which is what usually happens. And if they don't, then we need to question them on that. Then the powers, privileges, and immunities of Parliament Act. This doesn't relate directly in terms of how we relate to departments, but it does mention that if you request somebody to present Parliament and they refuse, then you can actually use a legal summons, and it defines how that summons can happen. That generally isn't needed. Usually when we invite people, they come. But if it's a particularly contentious issue, there is that legal prescription that allows us to summon people to Parliament or summon information to be presented to the department and to the portfolio committee. Then the rules of the National Assembly, again, members might be familiar with this given the training that it's had, but rule 137, 2 there says that that the committee must report on its activities at least once a year in the House, and also be accountable for all the decisions taken by it, except for those decisions concerning its internal business. So we don't have to tell them about the small workings of the committee, but we need to report on the bigger decisions in the House. And that relates to how the various things that the committee may do, and that is they may summon any person or any document in terms of Rule 138. They might receive petitions, presentations, or submissions from interested persons. They can conduct public hearings, permit oral evidence, on petitions, representations, and submissions. They can determine their own procedures. So, like we said earlier, for instance, we've made the decision in practice in this committee to invite the entities several times throughout the year to present on their inner workings. And then they can meet at a venue determined by it, which can also be outside of Parliament. They also have the mandate, although this also doesn't usually happen in practice, that they may be able to, they can sit at any time. So they can sit on a day which is not a working day. They can sit, they may also, with permission, be sit when the assembly is, when the assembly is not sitting, and when it is sitting with special permission, and also during recess. So legally we can do that, but in practice it usually doesn't happen. Then Rule 67 makes one exception to the information that that committees can request, and those are sub judice. So anything that is still being dealt with by the courts is not dealt with the committee until such time as the legal case has been decided, and that's sort of in terms of the Constitution, separating the powers and giving the judiciary its respective responsibility. Then, moving on, the Moneyball's Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. This is the act that basically allows Parliament to have a direct influence on the budget department, and it's the real place that the committee is able to influence budgets. And this is only now starting to happen with the introduction of the budget office, which really gives us the capacity to make an informed contribution towards the budget of the department. And this usually happens through our budget review and recommendation reports, which occur in October, November, after we've looked at the annual reports end of September. So Section 5 of this Act says that the committees must annually assess the performance of each national department with reference to its medium-term expenditure, its measurable objects, objectives, its strategic priorities. Also, the expenditure reports relating to that department's the Section 32 reports, which are basically quarterly reports, they come out four times a year. We will note that this is also already being included in our draft program for the next term. Financial statements and annual reports of such departments, report of the public, of the committees on public accounts, which also we have engaged with, any other information, any other information requested or presented to a House or Parliament. So there are ad hoc issues that are also related to budgets that the committee can deal with. Then, if you'll refer to the big printout that I gave you, it's difficult to see it on the slide up ahead. But I gave this to members just because it's a useful reference tool. It's from the Heinrich Böll Stiftung, which is an independent academic or an independent think tank. And they basically just give a nice diagram of the regular cycle of Parliament. And this is useful, again, maybe for new members also, but this is just to remind us of what's coming up. Obviously, this year the cycle is a bit out of sync because we had an election year, so it's kind of pushed things a little bit out. But by the end of the year, we should, by towards October, we should start getting back into the regular cycle. So, for instance, what you'll notice, the State of the Nation address in February, the committee program usually happens in March. Then the review of the budget by the finance committees, and the review of the budget by our portfolio committees and special select committees in May, and then the next committee program in June. Special oversight visits are usually conducted, like the oversight trips and study tours often happen in July. Then there's sectoral parliament towards the end of July, the next committee program, annual reports towards the end of September. Review of annual reports in preparation of BEES4R, the budget review recommendation, happens in October. And that in turn feeds into the recommendations from the budget review and recommendation report is what actually feeds into the mini-budget or the adjusted budget towards the end of the year. So that's the main point at which the committee can make a serious recommendation or an actual physical recommendation on how to influence the budget of the department if necessary. And then it just repeats over and over again. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but the outside of this chart also outlines how the public can participate. So in these various processes, there are ways in which the public can get involved and in ways in which members can engage their constituents to participate if they wish to do so. And then going on to the last slide, which is on the back of that, the other side of that same printout. This is from the Parliament website, and it's also useful as it outlines the usual process that legislation needs to follow, both in terms of Section 75 and 76 bills. We might want to be dealing with legislation later this year, so I thought this would sort of help members to be aware of the processes when we engage with the department, probably around the Border Management Agency legislation, which might have to be introduced this year. And then it will probably be more on the left-hand side, because I think it's going to be a Section 75 bill, which is primarily dealing with the national level rather than the provincial, which is a 76 bill. And that's all I have to say. I just really wanted to give an outline of the basic framework. Sorry if I went too fast.
Yeah, we did go on a real bus here, and but I think this, the presentation and the layout is a lot more clear. All of us, we have got color copies, so that we are able to follow it. I think this will make our life a lot more easier. Can we check, is there anything that we may need Adam to explain a little bit more? And if we can just have maybe some clarification questions from members. I take for granted that the staff knows better. But I mean, if you get confused like me as well, I mean, you can ask, because in answering your questions, then we will also benefit. Except the PMG, who is a tape recorder. Yes, and I don't
know. Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, and thank you to Mr. Salomon. In fact, my mind is around the Section 32 report. When now, how many times are we doing them, and when is the next one due this time around? Because it is a requirement.
Can you indicate where, which section are you referring to?
It's in terms of the PSMA, Public Financial Management Act. Oh no, wait, sorry, it's the Money Vault and Amendment Procedures Act, which is slide not numbered on here, but it's the third last. There are four Section 32 reports a year. Usually the committee deals with one or two of them. So we'll deal with two Section 32 reports at a time, just because of the limited amount of meetings that we have with the department. So the department also will deal with Section 32 reports when it updates us on its budget and its annual reports. But usually it's two times a year that we deal with Section 32 reports, and I think we have it on the schedule. It is got a draft program that we'll deal with later. It's on the schedule for the next quarter.
While the members are still thinking a lot more deeply, can you just take us through the powers of the committee to investigate a matter? Like, you'll remember that we had a challenge of the adult world outside. After the chief whip was crying about it, and then there was a claim that they've got a license, and then the municipality was claiming that they are not aware of the license. And then as a committee, can we set out to investigate the matter? And if that is the case, how is it undertaken? And what are the possibilities of doing that, and where you investigate even a complicated matter, can the committee then appoint a specialist to actually do that if ever we are allowed to do so?
Well, the main legislation or proclamation dealing with this is the rules of the National Assembly, which entitles Parliament, which also relates to the Constitution, to call anybody or any person or any document to provide evidence to the committee in a matter that relates to it. One thing that has changed is that the Common Publications Board, which also deals with these adult institutions, used to be under us, and it no longer is. If we're interested in, we can move. Yeah, as an example, but we would have been able to deal with that, but it's not really our mandate anymore. I'm sure we could find a reason, but also within the institution of Parliament, the research unit also provides research support. So on any matter that's of interest to the committee, they can request the research unit to do further information. And if we want to do a more extensive research, the research unit also conducts. They can do terms of reference for external parties to do research for Parliament. So if you want to do more detailed kind of research and a more extensive research, that's also a possibility through the administration of Parliament. But the main way is getting anybody or any document to be submitted to the committee or to Parliament.
Provincial governments and local authorities. then the last entity that has been moved over to communication is the Film and Publications Board, which has been established by the Film and Publications Act of 1996. It regulates the creation, production, possession, and distribution of films, interactive computer games, publications, and it's also responsible for monitoring adult films. So this entity is no longer with Home Affairs, it's with the Department of Communication. Then, here we have got the functions of the committee, which I think they are still relevant even now, is to consider legislation referred to it. So any legislation that is done by the IAC and the department will be referred to the committee, then we have to process it. To exercise oversight over the Department of Home Affairs and its entities. So the entities, you know, they are accountable to the portfolio committees and the Department of Home Affairs. To consider international agreements referred to it. So there are international agreements that will be, you know, in the future referred to the portfolio committee, and these international agreements have to be processed by this committee. To consider the budget vote of the department, I think this one is, we just recently did the budget vote of the department and it was passed. To facilitate public participation in this process. In the past, the public participation has been mostly on legislation, where all the legislation that were passed, there has been public participation. You know, we advertise the newspapers and then we solicit, you know, comments from members of the public. To facilitate appointments with statutory bodies. Then here we have got two entities. One of them is the Electoral Commission. So the commissioners are recommended to be appointed by this committee to the president and to the House and to the president. To consider all matters referred to it in terms of the legislation, the rules of parliament or resolution of the House. I think most of the stuff here, it will be covered in terms of what the committee will have done during the past 5 years. Method of the work of the committee. What we did in the past was that Home Affairs has got provincial offices in all the provinces. So around this time, if it was not because of the elections, because we are going to have the annual report in September, we used to call the provincial managers and engage with them in terms of their successes and their challenges. And then this will be empowering members so that, you know, when they engage with the Department of Home Affairs in October on their annual report, members have got more information, now I would say, from on the ground, in other words, from the provinces. So they will give more information in terms of how many offices are going to be established or have been established, what are the challenges in the province, in the provinces. So I'm not sure, but I mean, this has worked very well in terms of empowering members. So and then oversight, this is, you know, oversight cases to offices of the department and for protection. And then key highlights of the committee. So we oversight visit to provinces including the port of entry and Lindela repatriation center and refugee reception offices. We did oversight to provinces and then we go to offices of the department and then we also go to port of entry. Then also there's Lindela in housing where people have to be deported. Then they are sent in there. So it is our responsibility to do an oversight on that facility. Also, there are refugee offices. You might have learned that there are some that have closed, like in Johannesburg, there was one has closed, and then in PE has closed. Even here in the Western Cape, it has closed. Then there are reasons why those refugee offices have been closed. And then there are two in Pretoria, but yeah, Marabastad and Tiro. Tiro, we're told that it was a temporary facility at that time, but I think it's still operational now. So people who are around housing when they want to go, yeah, they want to go in Africa, and then they still go to Pretoria. Then there's one in Mosila, and then there's one in Durban. So those are the refugee offices. The other highlight is the introduction of the smart card ID. The smart card ID was introduced last year as part of the Department of Home Affairs modernization program. So this is a good highlight that it has been going on for a long time. So the smart card is going to replace the green ID book, and then members that have been here in the last parliament, they do have a smart card, and then I've also sent an SMS and email to members who want to apply for the smart card, so that now we can make the arrangement for them to go and apply. And the requirement is that if you are over 60, then you don't pay the 140. 60 downwards, then you pay 140. So if there are members who would like to apply, and then I'll need to have their ID numbers so that they can check all their everything is in order before they go and apply. So far I've got two members who have indicated that they want to go and apply. The committee also during the past year amended 7 legislation, and then because a decision also was made that the refugee offices are going to be moved closer to the land borders. Now, like I mentioned, that there are refugee offices that have closed in PE, and then in Cape Town, and then in Johannesburg. The intention is to move those refugee centers to closer to the border, so that when asylum seekers, when they come, then they can be processed. If they are rejected, then they can just go back home. But if they are not rejected, then they could come into the country. Then, here in terms of the refugee reception offices, the only clarity that I think we maybe didn't have from the department is that for those who have been accepted, and then they travel, they say to Cape Town, and then they want to renew their status. Where will they go? Whether they should go back to their refugee status, or whether to go to any normal office of the Department of Home Affairs. So I think that's one issue that as a committee will also need to assess it with the Department of Home Affairs. And then there was an amendment on the birth and death registration amendment bill that the children should be registered within 30 days of birth. This is to avoid the issue of late registration of birth. So this has been one of the key highlights of the committee. The reason being that there are a lot of people who want to get our documents, who claim that I was born in South Africa, and these are others. So if kids are registered at an early, within 30 days, it will assist the department in the country to make sure that it's only those that are South Africans that will enter the National Population Register. Then, with the last elections, South Africans that are living abroad were allowed to vote in the National Assembly, starting from the 2014 election. And then over time, this is an international study tour. Like I mentioned earlier on, the department visited the provinces. And there was a coordinated oversight in 2010 prior to the World Cup, where Home Affairs participated with other parliamentary committees to check on the host cities for their readiness in terms of hosting the World Cup. We did that, and then it was successful. Then here I just listed the provinces that we visited. We went to the Free State, we went to Gauteng, we went to Limpopo, went to Mpumalanga, went to Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, and then the Eastern Cape. If you check here and there, you will see that no, I did not put the Western Cape, although we did went to the reception office here in Cape Town and also at the airport. I think at that time we went to the airport, I think it was twice. Yeah, in Barrack Street with tourism. Our first oversight was with the Committee on Tourism. So actually we have not done a lot of offices here in the Western Cape in terms of visiting them. And then Northern Cape. That was one that we were supposed to do last year, but because of legislation, we were not able to do that. So we have not discussed this. Then on the oversight on the entities, we did visit the Female Publication Board head office in Johannesburg. This was during our oversight visit to campaign. Then we were able to go and see how they operate and try to watch some of the things in terms of how they do their work. The Electoral Commission went to the old office to meet with the IEC there just to see how the operators were. There is an outstanding oversight visit to government printing work in Pretoria, so we have not visited GPW. In fact, several times they've invited the committee to come there. They also indicated that they can even pay for us to go. So probably when they come before the committee, they will still extend that invitation to the committee. And then over the last 5 years, we only did one international study tour. That was went to Russia in 2012. So detail of that information is also reflected in the leaders' report. On the legislation, here I just listed them because the information is also there on the legal report. I just listed the legislation that we processed. The South African Citizenship Amendment Bill, which was finalized in 2010. The Birth and Death Registration Amendment Bill, which was also finalized in 2010. The Local Government Municipal Electoral Amendment Bill, which was also finalized in 2010. Then the Refugee Amendment Bill was finalized in 2011. The Immigration Amendment Bill was also finalized in 2011. Then the last two, if you check there, is Electoral Amendment Bill, PMB, that is the private member bill, which was introduced prior to the last one which was introduced. Then that bill, it was not passed by the committee. There were certain things that they were introducing the new electoral system. So the committee was not able to pass that bill. Then the last one was the Electoral Amendment Bill, which was passed wherein one of the issues was to allow South Africans who are living abroad to vote in the National Assembly. It introduced the issue of constituency-based system. Yeah, so Africans who are living abroad to vote both in the National Assembly and also in the provinces. So that day it was not passed. Then the international agreement, there was only one international agreement, which was the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and the government of the Kingdom of Lesotho on the facilitation of cross-border movement of citizens of the Republic of South Africa and the Kingdom of Lesotho. The agreement was not approved by the committee. The reason being that at that time it came to the attention of the committee that citizens in Lesotho, they don't have the National Population Register. So it was easy for people from Lesotho to use a photocopy just to come to South Africa. So the committee felt that no, otherwise you are going to have people coming from other countries claiming that no, they are Lesotho and then they come to South Africa. So that agreement was not approved based on that. Statutory appointment. Before the local government elections, we appointed, the committee appointed a commissioner because as a result of the death of one of the commissioners. So we appointed a commissioner. And then the second bullet there, I just put it, although it was not under the committee, because the current commissioners were appointed in 2012, but they were not appointed by the committee. There was an ad hoc committee that dealt with that. But there were two members, the chairperson and the whip, who participated in that process. Commissioners are appointed for a period of 7 years. Okay, the focus area during the fourth parliament was the issue of modernization of the Department of Home Affairs. The committee interrogated the importance of finalizing the ICT integration. The committee was not able to visit government printing to see the new passport and ID printing machine in Pretoria. So if we get that chance, we'll be in a position as this committee to see that machine. Then there's issue of duplicate cases. This is a problem for citizens. When we do oversight, there's been problems wherein you find that there's two types of duplicates. One is wherein one person has got two ID numbers. Then the second one is wherein two people are sharing one ID. So it becomes a problem if especially when somebody is sharing an ID number with someone that they don't even know, when a person dies, then it becomes very difficult for Home Affairs to issue a death certificate. So that's one of the issues that the committee dealt with. If I recall, the department also publicized names of people that have duplicate cases. If I remember, it was about 29,000 of people that have got duplicate cases that were requested to come forward to Home Affairs to have their issues resolved. The main problem was that if a person has got two ID numbers, sometimes they will come, but sometimes you might find that on one ID they might have accumulated debt. So when they go to Home Affairs, they will say, ID number one, I don't want to use it, I want to use ID number two, knowing that ID number one has got debt. So Home Affairs is working closely with the Credit Bureau to check. If I go to Home Affairs and say, no, I've got two ID numbers, I want to resolve it. So they've got the responsibility of checking to say, which one can we do away with, which one can you remain with? If you are running away from yourself, then they will be able to find out that, no, Adam, you stay with this ID number, so that no, you can pay all your debt. Then the issue of people having two people having one ID number. It was reported during our engagement with the department was that sometimes because the system at home affairs were not in, they are not integrated. When a 17-year-old child has got a birth certificate, has not even applied for an ID, somebody from another country could come to a corrupt official and say, I want an ID book. So what they do, they go there on the system and check who has not applied for this ID. Then they take that ID number and give that person on that person's name. So if the owner of the ID comes to apply with a birth certificate, then that person is able to apply. Then you have got two ID, you have got two people sharing one ID number, and it becomes a problem. So some of the people that when they put this on the newspaper, some of the people, they never went, because if I know that now I got my ID in a corrupt manner, I'm not going to go and say, no, I've got a duplicate case, because otherwise my ID is going to be confiscated. The ongoing modernization of the ID application process and ID was noted by the committee as a means of such issues. Less registration of birth, like I mentioned earlier on, I think also the minister mentioned in the house is that the department is going to do away with it. Making sure that no, when children are born, they are registered. That's why you find that no, if you go to most hospitals, children are, when they are born there, they are able to be registered, so that no, mothers, they don't have to go home and come back. But also in terms of registering at the health facilities was that there was an issue. I'm sure as we engage with the department that sometimes, you know, there are cultural issues where in the child has to be named before. So I think maybe the committee will come with some innovative ways of assisting, because if a child is at the hospital, then they could not, sometimes the mother would say, no, I'm still waiting for so-and-so to give the name. At that time, then they have to release the mother to go back home. So you find that the children are not registered. Then issue requiring attention in the Fifth Parliament, closure of the refugee centers, I mentioned that. So far, the only one that I know is the one that is in Lucena, and I'm sure the second one is supposed to be at Libombo in Mpumalanga. So we need to also, you know, look into that, monitor that. The modernization program and the rollout of the life capture for ID cards and passport in all offices. Like I mentioned, it's not all offices of Home Affairs currently that, you know, you can go and apply for a smart card. There are certain offices that have got a life capture. So we have to ensure that, you know, the department rolls this life capture so that, you know, people, especially also in the rural areas, are in a position to apply for this smart ID. Otherwise, it's going to be people in the urban area. Then there's the issue of filling of priority and a vacant funded post, and then I'm sure this was also, you know, raised during the budget for debate, that there are posts that are funded and then are vacant that have not been filled. So we, you know, this will also need attention. There's an issue with public works. This is an ongoing problem for the Department of Home Affairs in terms of opening offices as well as government drinking works. So as we do our own oversight, you know, during the course. course of the next 5 years, will be in a position to see what are the problems that public works and health, public works and Department of Home Affairs are having. Duplicate cases, as I spoke about them. Finalization of regulation related to immigration and refugee amendment bills. I'm sure we are going to be dealing with the immigration regulation in our next quarter. I have not seen if the refugee regulations have been finalized. And then if you check on my other slide in terms of when we completed the refugee, it was in 2011. So we need to make sure that no, those regulations are finalized. And I know that no, the immigration one has been finalized. The committee to learn more on issue of regional integration is related to immigration on the African continent and on facilitation of crooked of skills from other parts of the world. Better monitoring and management of migrants within the country. You recall that when during the briefing by the department, they also mentioned that if you go to refugee centers, there will be a lot of people there. Some of them, they are not necessarily refugees, they were migrants, but they were using a refugee asylum seeker to get into the country. So that's why in 2010 there was this special dispensation for Zimbabwe to come forward and apply. There are people who were here who didn't have their documents to come and apply. Then there were people who acquired documents fraudulently, who the department said, come forward. We're not going to be arresting you, and then you apply for an appropriate thing. So out of this claim that there are between 2 to 3 million Zimbabweans in South Africa, we don't know the number, but the people who came to apply is about 275,000. So, and as we heard the minister, then some of their payments are coming to an end now, and then those, then the minister during the course of the coming month in August, and then we'll make a decision. But also on this one, just only for my own observation, was that because it was not clear during the last term, there were people who had IDs, then they got gone. So they were given like a 4-year payment, then you have got a bond of maybe 20 years. So probably we need to find clarity in terms of how is Home Affairs going to sort that out? Because I mean, the person has got a bond for 20 years, but the person has been given a payment for 4 years. The development of migration policy by the Department of Home Affairs. So this is one of the areas that as a committee we should also look into within the next 5 years. Because there is no migration policy at the moment, and we need to work together with the department to do the migration policy. Then the last one, on the trip to Russia, then the Russians mentioned that they are interested here, although it's not in our area, in forging cooperation with South Africans in the area of higher education. Then the focus will be in the area of information technology and IT and establishing exchange programs. So probably this one could be followed by the Committee on Higher Education or the department. Then the last slide is just a list of some of the stakeholders that the committee has engaged in within the last 5 years. And in fact, the UNHCR, they have sent some booklets for members, and Nandipa will be, she'll be sending those booklets, we got them yesterday, for members to familiarize themselves with the issues of refugees and international protocols. So, thank you very much. That's my presentation.
thank you, Eddie. I think all the BBC reporters, there is very little for us to talk to, because it's just things that happen that we can't change. And but I think moving forward, we'll just need to hit some of the things that we need further processing as it's already done. The issues of the duplicate cases, I mean, the department knows the people that are actually sharing certain ideas. Like you said, 29,000.
Yes,
they know. And then if they know, then there should be a way of actually dealing with that rather than working on a voluntary basis. There should be a way if people knock their heads around. And also, of course, try to check as well whether it is possible for this committee to have the list of those 29,000 people. And then see how we can assist. And it's lucky that the statutory appointment, it looks like I think we are still in the safe. If they have been appointed 2012 for 7 years, that means they are going to 2019. So we shouldn't worry that much until the last year, of course. Yes, unless somebody resigns or somebody gets hired or so. And otherwise, then we're not going to come across this. Is there any other thing that you may need Eddie, to clarify more? Other than a discussion, because I don't really think that we need to discuss this, because this is just a record of what has happened. Maki. To discuss, because I think what this document is a legacy report, it just only tells us what the previous committee has done. And then ourselves and then in the committee situation will have an opportunity wherever we have to take a decision of actually doing some work on our new work, then we'll work out the modus operandi of how we execute. executed that way. At the moment, we're just simply going through of what the previous committees are. And for us, just to know that they did facilitate public participation. Whether they did it correctly or not correctly, at the moment, it's immaterial. So we just want to know that the committee did that as one of its functions. And then when we will be doing our work, then we will always discuss before we actually undertake any work outside the parliament, and then how we can do it. That's where the input will come in to actually ensure that we've got a proper strategy of invitations and the rest. That is the help. Thank you. Madam.
Chair, I'm sorry, I don't know whether I'm out of hand or what, but I just wanted to check if ever when doing an oversight, you've got a tool at hand that you utilize when you go to oversight and that. That is what I wanted to know. And then, you know, I've been asking myself, I started applying for an ID, you know, because it's a unique number. How do you allocate those numbers? That's for curiosity. I wanted to know. Because mine, it ends with 9. You know, it's my birth date and those numbers and 9. And I've seen my daughter, it ends with 1. How do you allocate those unique numbers? That's for curiosity. Since I was 16, I was asking myself. And thank you.
Okay, I think it's quite an interesting question, but I doubt whether it is really relevant today. Today, on this specific one, I think we'll have those discussions. Yes, and then we'll interrogate. I think even as well as the department when it comes up there. Yeah. And then they should be able to explain those. Because I was just simply requesting if there were questions of clarity on what he has said, just to understand what he has said and what that committee has done, just to understand it only. Just to understand it. Let me just simply indicate. If he says to exercise oversight over the Department of Home Affairs and its entity, then we ask, if you say you have done oversight over the department and entities, did you do all the entities? Then you get clarity. Then you are getting clarity. You don't necessarily debate that oversight, what was entailed and blah, 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 no. And then we just get clarity that the entities were done, all of them, or there is one that is missing, because that will assist us moving forward. We know that we have not done all of them. I think that's what is, that's avoiding discussion for now.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenter. My question is, it's a clarity anyway, because of the closure of the 3 offices from the 3 provinces. Now, I just want to check if there was any oversight done after the closure of these offices to see if the services are poor or are getting better.
Okay, Chairperson. Chairperson, I propose that we prioritize consideration of the recommendations, and I repeat, consideration of the recommendations. for purposes of evaluation, prioritization, and possible action when necessary. Thank you.
Yeah, in short, when we do an oversight, then Adam, our researcher, you know, he provides a document in terms of where we are going, in terms of, you know, what we expect. So that is the only tool that we use as members, you know, for members to say, you know, you are going to this border, then here's the information, then you can able to interrogate, you know, the issues, yeah. Then on the closure of we have not. Yeah.
I hope we're going to do oversight on this one.
Can we then go back to our program where we're actually awaiting Khayalethu? Is Khayalethu here? Serious, our home. Is he connected? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to do it? Oh, okay. I think then we must give you the freedom of this committee room and take us on. Thank you very much. Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies. I thought I was due to present at 10:30 according to the program that was given to me. Morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. We have distributed hard copies of the presentation, but it's also appearing on the slides. By way of introduction, Mr. President, I would like to state that the OISD was created. When I say OISD, I mean our office on institutions supporting democracy. So OISD is just an abbreviation. It was created in terms of the resolution of the National of 21st November 2008, and the office is located within the bigger office of the Speaker, and the Deputy Speaker has been dedicated the duty of dealing with the ISDs, Institution Supporting Democracy, commonly referred to as Chapter 9 and Associated Institutions. So the short version is just called them ISDs. It was created with a specific intent to provide strategic support and advice to the Speaker's office, the Deputy Speaker, and the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker on matters that relate to ISDs. It was also created with specific intent to strengthen. It was also established with a specific intent to strengthen the relationship between these ISDs and Parliament. Again, to coordinate all communication between the National Assembly and the ISDs, to increase the impact made by ISDs in the National Assembly, to facilitate the increased use of ISDs by the NA for increased complementary oversight. Also to support National Assembly in its oversight responsibility over the ISDs. OSDs interact with committees on a range of issues, including the following. This is not a watertight list,
appointment of members of these ISTs, the complaints by or against ISTs, reports that are submitted by these ISTs, and what we actually do there is to analyze the reports and see if they indeed comply with the mandate, the responsibilities of these institutions. And we also do that by taking into cognizance the strategic plans that these ISTs might have submitted to Parliament. Also to deal with general requests from ISTs. This is a support role that Parliament is expected to play. Deal with requests from portfolio committees. If there is a specific request from any of the portfolio committees that deal with ISTs, we are there to help and deal with that request, be it research request, be it legal advice, be it presentation of this nature. Also, to deal with governance issues that sometimes burden these ISTs, if there are governance issues that Parliament has to deal with. So we also deal with that. And when I say we deal with that, it does not mean we take over the role of members, because we are here in the support office. Members are the ones we provide technical support to in order to address and deal with these issues. So I wanted to be clear that it's not like the office is taking over the role of members. Also, Chairperson, I think it's important for the sake of sound relations and vibrant interactions with the ISTs, that all members, the new and the old members, have a thorough understanding of this complex relationship between ISTs and Parliament. I'm saying it is complex because the office, that is the OST that I represent, was created because it was detected that relationship between Parliament and ISTs is rather complex compared to a relationship that Parliament has with the executive government department in particular. Hence, the office to focus on ISTs, that is Chapter 9 and associated issues, were created. Coming to the topic. The relationship is complex in many ways. If I would be going through the slides, there is a point where we say there is an issue about independence of these institutions. And as you might be aware, Chairperson, that issue is a debatable issue. These institutions feel sometimes when Parliament is exercising its oversight or its accountability role, that they are interfering with their independence or with. So I'm just generalizing and say it's complex in that sense, yes. The relationship between Parliament and Chapter 9/ISD is therefore threefold. The first relationship is the support relationship. And these kinds of relationships have not been taken or put in a order of importance. But I first thought that it's necessary to start with the support relationship to sensitize members that, look, we have a role and a duty or a responsibility in Parliament to support this institution. This is enunciated in Section 181(3) of the Constitution, which states that all organs of state must assist and protect these institutions to ensure their independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness. You would agree with me, sir, that only so the interpretation of that is complex, it is subjective. Also, the other relationship is that of accountability. Section 181, again, of the Constitution, dictates that these institutions must account to the NA, the National Assembly, and must report on their activities and performance of their functions at least once a year. And I want to say at least once a year. And the emphasis that I'm trying to put is that any time if they are called upon by the National Assembly to come and report on a certain issue or their if they are even required by a national assembly to conduct a certain research, they can do that, and they don't have to wait until the end of the year or to submit the report, the annual report, so to say. They are, the report actually, we could organize them into two parts. They are special reports and they are those annual reports. Special reports are those reports that are ad hoc, they come any time. To use an example, the public protector, they submit reports, the Human Rights Commission submit reports, CGE submit reports, any time if there's an important issue that they might have conducted research or investigated. So we call them special reports. Again, the third relationship is that of accountability. Accountability continues. ISDs are required to report to Parliament on the implementation of their mandate and the expenditure of public funds. Again, this is where interference is normally alleged by certain individuals or members of the society. But Parliament has a responsibility where public funds or taxpayers' money are used to ensure that they are used appropriately. We are a watchdog or an institution that should be ensuring, which runs the public, actually, ensuring that indeed public funds are spent appropriately. But as you would again agree with me, sometimes this is interpreted or perceived as interference. Under accountability again, accountability seeks to achieve the following. It seeks to safeguard against corruption, against abuse of power, and any other improper behavior. Excuse my spelling there, sir. Again, it seeks to effect democratic control. It also seeks to improve performance, because when these institutions, they perform their activities, they must know that somebody is going to, or is looking over them and is going to call them to account for whatever performance or activities they conduct. It also serves as a platform for public accountability. And this is very important because Parliament is representing the public. So when they come to account to Parliament, they are accounting to the public. That is something that sometimes is missed by most of us. The other relationship is that of oversight, which is governed by Section 55(2) of the Constitution. In terms of this section, NA is required to maintain oversight over any organ of state. And the Constitution, at Section 239, defines what is an organ of state. And if you look at that definition, these institutions are also organs of state. They fall within the term organ of state. And again, I'm emphasizing this because, again, of this different interpretation of their independence. Sometimes they are perceived, and sometimes they perceive themselves as not part of the state, which is South Africa. They see themselves as very independent, as I don't know, but there are many terms that are being used to justify that they should not be regarded as an organ of state. But the Constitution, Section 229, is very clear on that. Again, this oversight relationship is intended to detect and prevent abuse, arbitrary behavior, or illegal or unconstitutional conduct. And these are the things that I'm spelling out these bullets specifically to clarify that when you talk oversight, there's a purpose. When you talk accountability, there's a purpose behind that. Why the constitutional drafters made these institutions accountable and accountable to the National Assembly, and that they must be overseen by the National Assembly. Also to improve the oversight, to improve efficiency and effectiveness of their operations. there is law that outlines their functions, roles, and stuff like that. So they must be held accountable, and we must oversee that indeed they are operating according to the legislation, not according to their wishes or individual wishes. To monitor achievement of goals that are set by the same legislation. Also to improve transparency of their operations and enhance, and by doing so, we will be enhancing the public trust. There is also what we refer to as complementary oversight. This complementary oversight, because these institutions operate as watchdogs over the executive, and therefore after they report to Parliament, and they need to submit their reports, be it a special report or annual report, and they make their findings and recommendations. We say they complement Parliament's oversight role over the executive in the sense that if you look at their report, take the issue of xenophobic report, which at some stage was compiled by the Human Rights Commission, which had recommendations specifically talking to the Department of Home Affairs as an example to clarify the point we're trying to make. Human Rights Commission in that report, I can't remember what year is that report, conducted the research, and they emphasized that this xenophobic attacks. And I might be misquoting the title, but broadly it's called the xenophobic report. These xenophobic attacks are likely to come again. And recommendations were made in that report to curb or prevent the reoccurrence of the same. And that report was submitted to Parliament. When recently, again, there were attacks of the foreigners. Human Rights Commission came out claiming that we anticipated and made recommendations. Parliament should have at least held the department accountable. But again, it's not a cut and paste situation. This committee has to interrogate and engage, for instance, Human Rights Commission on the recommendations or findings of recommendations that they've made, and feel it if it feels necessary, make those recommendations to the resolutions of this committee so that they can be implemented by the executive. That's what we're trying to say, that they assist Parliament in terms of exercising its oversight role over the executive. I've taken the liberty here of also going beyond the scope of what I was asked to present to say there are challenges that are often raised by these ISPs. And it's likely that even the IEC in this instance is going to raise those, but I think for the benefit of the committee, that they complain about little time allocated to interact with the portfolio committees. They report. Also, they complain about short notices. Some are called 2 days before the actual day when they must come and present to Parliament. And these are, I want to mention that these are general. They are not specific to this committee, but these are general challenges that all ISPs normally present. That again, once they present their report, there is absolutely no feedback. They just present, get the questions here, and they go back home, and that's the end of it. No feedback in terms of processing their recommendations, whether their recommendations, for example, have been taken care of, then there would be, for instance, if they impact on the Department of Home Affairs, that indeed they will be presented to the Department of Home Affairs for them maybe to reply to them or for them to implement. Again, the general one of funding constraints. They will always mention that the challenge they face is inadequate funding to meet their statutory obligations. But again, those, as I was saying, those are general complaints that you will find common from these ISPs. The relationship of these ISPs with government departments, which is called the prerogative, in most instances, the relevant enabling legislation. When I say relevant enabling, I mean, for instance, in our case, the Electoral Commission Act often creates a functional relationship between the ISPs and the portfolio department in terms of appointments. If you look, for example, as to how members of these institutions are appointed, the department plays a part, and also in terms of budget allocation. And then again, like any other state organ, government departments have a constitutional obligation to assist these institutions to ensure their independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness. And this is also what I said earlier on, or I referred earlier on to as also an obligation, the support role that we as Parliament also are expected to play in terms of the Constitution. Government departments are also organs of state, and therefore this applies to them as well. However, Section 1814 stipulates that no one may interfere with the functioning of this institution. And again, I'm raising that because when they complain about interference, they normally quote this section. And to me, and this is my view, they always confuse accountability and oversight with interference. Yes, it's important to mention that even government departments are not supposed or are not expected to interfere with the functioning of these institutions in terms of the supreme law of the country, which is the Constitution. I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You are done.
And I think I'm on time.
You are done. I think you should have made it a little bit much more clear. And it would have been nice if it was a full house. So then I think we have got a serious responsibility to be trainers of the rest that are not here. Yeah, but I think, let me just check with you, how many committees have you addressed up to now?
Chair, we have addressed the new members on the committee on arts and culture committee. We have addressed the induction of new members. There was this induction of new members which took place. We also addressed them. And again, I might also share that we have been asked by the House Chair Committees of the Honorable Forig to address all committees during the month of August. I think at the sitting of their scheduled meeting, they are short meeting, and there's a program. I think Honorable has already sent to chapter six, advising them about the slots that you need to address them. So that is ongoing.
Yeah, one thing, of course, is you should be understanding the reason why I'm raising this specific matter, because it looks like, I'm sure I can say, the session you had on the induction, you can take it as you have not done anything. Because at the time of induction, everybody is haywire. The new members don't even know where they are, and they are not even worried about that. All they worry about is to be members of parliament. That's all. And definitely there is a need of really engaging these committees. such a, an induction, it's organized properly. And then you go and take them on. Because certain committees don't have any ISDs, and then you're not going to do anything to them. And but the members in those committees may be influential members in their political party, where they can actually become much more dangerous in misinterpreting and communicating wrong things out there. And I think I would, in any way, I don't have the authority to do so, but I can only just simply say that if it is possible to engage the powers that be for a possible 3 hour to a morning session with members, and then you take them on, or the structure so called is the WIPS forum, and then with the mandate that after you have taken them on, then they will go and address their own party members in their own caucus. That is probably may assist us to get a quicker calm on the people that are supposed to observe this constitutional provision. Because definitely, I'm sure you remember when the public protector was briefing the Justice Committee, you know, that briefing ended up being the newsmaker of the whole week. You know, and it is very important that we do have that calm. Okay, honorable members, are there? Okay.
Can I add something, sir? Yeah. Thank you for the suggestion. And then I think I must mention that these ISPs themselves have been invited at these induction workshops that I referred to earlier on to also brief members on what they think their mandate, their roles are, so that there could be that interrogation and engagement with them directly. They will make a presentation themselves. If, for instance, the Home Affairs Committee, ISA will be invited. If it's Justice, Human Rights Commission, Public Protector will be invited to talk to members about their mandate also, so that there could be that kind of engagement.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll have that specific sessions with them. But I mean, like as you have already indicated, that they always cry foul. And then even if they come and brief the committee, they will only talk and quote those sessions that actually support their position, and not making reference to the sessions that made support Parliament to want to do what it's supposed to do in terms of the constitution. So you need to have an objective body like your office, even though that you may also be construed to be an arm of the speaker, but an objective body that must actually indicate and say the constitution says so about this ISD, the constitution says so about Parliament, and then the members then must make up their minds in between, so that there is clear understanding. I mean, there is nobody that will give people information that they would hold him or her accountable. So, everybody who wants some serious liberty and unfettered freedom to, you know, to run with people. And so it's only an objective body in the middle that can actually spell out what is that that the Constitution wants to say and wants to see happen. And I think we will come and hear the IEC, but like as we said, is that you have assisted us to actually know, and they will be able to talk to them, and also be able, if they are actually misrepresenting certain provisions that empowers us to do work over them, then we will ask this question. us, I think, if there is any clarity, further clarity questions, then we can do so for Kayane to really make us hope. But while you are still thinking about that, I think the first, on your introduction, there is somewhere where you're saying coordinate communication between the National Assembly and the ISDs. And I'm now trying to find the NCOP. Is the NCOP excluded on certain sessions? And of course, where it is that Parliament, NCOP is taken to be included. But where there is a specific mention of National Assembly, that reference then excludes the NCOP. Am I making correct interpretation? Kailis?
Legally, yes. When you say Parliament, you include both houses, but when you say NA, you're specific to one house. Chair, that is taken from the resolution of the House which established this office. It made specific reference to NA, coordinate all interactions between National Assembly and this ISC. So it's taken very much in. However, that because we are one body, which is Parliament, and you will recognize, Chair, that in most instances, the role and the functioning or operations of these institutions it's at a national level, let me put it that way. It's generally at a national level, but where there are instances where, for instance, NCOP has to be engaged, for instance, if it's something about local government issues, if you take, for instance, service delivery issues, which Human Rights Commission also investigate and compile reports, we make sure that the report is also submitted to the NCOP for whatever representative of that local sphere is there. And as I was saying also, we analyze the report and make summaries, and we do favor them with that specific report. So they are typically not mentioned, but in operation, because we know Parliament is Parliament, it's one body, we do work with them.
Yeah, but I think that your explanation, I'm sure it is adequate, but just short of one thing. The clarity in the Constitution is that they are accountable to the National Assembly. The National Assembly then is obliged to hold them accountable. But then whatever report that goes to the NCOP is for their information, but they are not obliged to do anything. Even though that the work of this ISD would affect provinces or local municipalities, which at this level, these provinces and municipalities then are represented in the NCOP, not in the National Assembly. So that's what I just wanted to bring in and then to say. There is this one part which maybe moving forward we must talk to it. Must talk to you, especially your own office must talk to you, because where it makes reference to Parliament, it is clear that NCOP then is also obligated to do something. But where there is a direct specific mention of National Assembly, anything that NCOP can do on that one, then they are actually breaking rules or breaking the Constitution. And unless if there is other document or other resolutions that have been taken to try and facilitate that to be obligatory to the NCOP as well. But I mean, like the public protector, it is almost like a judicial office. It will always be very sensitive to anything that breaks the law. And they may even ask questions. No, it is fine. Is there any other thing, honourable member? Okay. I think this we can discuss, this one, so that we get clarity.
If it goes back to the complexity issue we referred to earlier on, the relationship is very complex, and I think it really needs to be outlined maybe at a more at a workshop where these institutions are held, so that the common understanding could be reached. You know, because exactly as the member is saying, I find it myself difficult when you, as an accounting, as Parliament responsible for holding these institutions accountable, when they come and they are told to justify and account about their activities and performance of their functions or roles. It's interpreted as interference, but it also differs from case to case. They may quote a specific instance where they say this is going beyond accountability. It's now bordering on interference. So sometimes there's a thin line there that I think when we engage on a particular case, we might even need to say, well, we are exercising our role as people who are supposed to oversee and make you accountable to us for public funds. So it's quite fascinating.
Okay, I'm sure you may be having some experience about some of them. I think there are some of these ISDs that have actually tried to propose to get the budget direct to themselves, not through a department. Did you come across that? Is there anything that you can talk?
Yes. In fact, that's a debate that's going on, I think, before the POs, as we speak. The fourth parliament made that referral to the fifth parliament to consider allocating the budget of entire Parliament's budget vote instead of departments, yes, and the political decisions that needs to be taken, because there are reasons as well why even from the onset they were channeled to the department. So it's a political issue that must be addressed, which might necessitate amendment of legislation. And I may share that the leader of cabinet is being engaged on this matter.
Okay.
All right.
I think more or less the objective of our policy requirement, since we have managed to do that, then it will be an ongoing interaction. Whatever matter arises, that may require or require permanent people. And I think another issue would be putting on the maximum. Members, are we done with Khaled? We can release him. Thank you very much for having graced our workshop and interacting with us and making our knowledge a little bit much more better with the ISDs. Thank you again. Honorable members, is there any possibility for just before Khaled to disappear? During the budget briefings, we did not call the IEC. We called the department. Because of time factor, I'm sure you remember. If you knew, our department, I think it was one of the best on the EPCs. I think we had 1.5 weeks. To deal with this briefing. So IEC was not called. But we also understand from other documents of Parliament that these institutions, they report or they account to the National Assembly through the DGs, through the department. They account the activities to the department account in Parliament. But that doesn't stop us from engaging directly with them. I've just tried to paint a particular picture. We know that they account through the department where they get their funds. And the department account for its activities together with all the entities. And then, but that doesn't mean that we can't engage the entities. But with this past briefing, we did not speak to IEC. With your experience working with them, is there any problem with that?
A huge problem,
sir. Yeah.
Huge problem. From even the what you just said, I don't want to give it a that they account through the department. They account directly to Parliament. Directly. So they will fight with you if you say they account through the department. I was at the forum of this institution supporting democracy where they invite us. There was a meeting, I think, beginning of this month. It's called FISD, Forum on Institutions, where they all meet the capacity. They raise this issue that they have not been called to present their budget.
Yeah.
And hue and cry around that, because again, they say they are independent. They support to Parliament. Parliament, when Parliament feels like they will call them to account on their strength and expenditure of the public funds, but when they are supposed to be called by Parliament to come and justify and present their APPs, for example, their strike plans and so forth, why did you not call us so that we can justify why we want 50 million, just making an example, so that we apply our programs as the DCM, so that come time of annual report, we are able to say, yes, we've achieved this and this, as you might have supported the amount that we requested. So I'm saying it's quite, again, an issue that they will raise.
When we started this
debate between myself and yourself, I'm sure that the other members, we can get a little bit involved in this mess. You see, I think we all know currently these ISDs are attached to departments. The current situation, they are attached to departments. Their budget is actually voted for through the departmental budget. And therefore, it is expected that they actually go to the department and convince the department on the figures that they want until they reach some agreement for the budget to be accepted in Treasury and produce all the documents. They actually convince the department that they need the 15 million. Until the department battles with all sorts of budgetary committees that they have, and until they reach by a particular amount that they agree that they will be able to afford within the fiscal. And then now, the next thing that comes up is when they account to the National Assembly, and National Assembly operates in terms of committees as well, and the committee attached to a portfolio of governments like ourselves, the Committee of Home Affairs, they'll be doing oversight over Home Affairs. And then under the current situation, when there is a serious cry that they have not been called to Parliament to come and actually present. And then, is it just simply a self-war, or is it a realistic complaint under the current situation? You know, it's like, as you're saying, if they've been removed from departments and then they get money directly through Parliament, definitely they'll have to come and convince Parliament on their budgetary requirements. But currently, their route is via the department. And the department presented even all the figures for the IEC, for the government treatment, and then as well as the Films and Publications Board. They've presented that. We have okayed it. And now I'm just simply just trying to check. Is it a war of fighting for independence, or is it a just war that we were supposed to come and present our strategy? Of course, like I've said, is that under normal circumstances they will be called, but with the past one, we had only 1.5 weeks. And then we were the first to go to the EPC. And then we needed that day to be briefed by the department and engage as a committee and have recommendations and then put up our report in. And that's actually the main reason why we did not speak to them. Otherwise, under normal circumstances, we meet them, and then I think the previous committee has met them, almost all of them, almost every year, even ourselves, I think next year, then with the budget process, we are going to engage them. Even though that engaging them is just simply to hear from them what is it that they are going to do with the money that they have agreed with Home Affairs. Because you will not be able to change until you have got the budget office is fully running. And then when you want to make any change on the budget, then you must also indicate where you're getting the money. And if there is no way where you're going to get the money, any change will mean that you are moving funds from somewhere else to somewhere else. And then you must have a proper motivation to do that. And we can only be assisted by the budget, a functioning budget office, to be able to do that. Otherwise, you can't, as of now. We have a legislation that empowers us to do that, but without the necessary technical capacity, you can't. So, Meraput, you did raise your hand before. Of course, I was just commenting.
Dear Chair, I do understand, you know, what you've been really explaining and even what Nadekaya has been saying. And I think it would be proper that people can set a date whereby we can be able to summon. I don't know if summoning or to ask the IEC that are coming on the 19th. However, it's because some of the members, they really wanted to make this thing a peak issue. And then that is why we recommended this workshop. And it is surprising that the very people who really don't understand, you know, how does this, the functioning of all this, or the processes of everything are not here. And even what Kaya was saying, you know, when you were saying that, you know, it's very, very, very serious. So he is also, I don't know, instilling some, I don't know, in the detail. You know, it's instilling something that as the committee we have not done. So please, can you try to not to use those serious challenges, you know? So, and put us in the safer side. Because I'm having another view that if that you are here, you're going to say yes, you see. So I think sometimes when we talk, let's not exaggerate. Let's talk facts in the proper way. I thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And then, of course, is that ourselves, we're not necessarily talking about the IEC.
Mm-hmm.
The IEC is our IEC.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but we're talking in general on these institutions. What is our relationship with them? So I think Kyle too has actually expanded on that. So we now know exactly where we are and how we should function with them. I think this time around I'm not playing marbles, Kyle, you are seriously released. Thank you very much. And if there is anything, and then you can raise whatever you can raise, and then I think we are done now.
Sorry, Chase. Yes.
Yeah.
When they were saying serious as far as they are concerned, as I was saying at the FISD meeting, not only IEC,
yeah.
That was not called. Other ISDs, and they are raising it as a serious issue. It's not like I'm saying it's serious. As I was saying, I was at their meeting, just to correct that. So they are considering it as a serious issue that they would not call anything. To some extent, I'm saying Parliament is undermining their independence. And I think, Chair, you would be aware that there is also an old constitutional court case that leads to IEC
ISD brought to the Constitutional Court about the process, this process of funding, currently funding and so on. So I think if we also look at that, it will be important so that our guns, I mean, are properly protected.
Thank you.